Major Arthur Flint, Reel 6.
Major Flint, you were saying that I asked you about just at the end of the last reel, we may have missed it. Did you have any tanks at Elverton Street?
No, not at Elverton Street. Not even light tanks. It was all... the RIPO was the nearest we got to that. All the actual tank training was done away down at Aldershot. We didn't even have a tank at Clapham Junction when I went into the 42nd. They wouldn't allow them... they only allow them on tank transporters. You couldn't drive them on the roads. One of the things I could tell you about the incident at Tilshead and cooperating with the, you know, sort of mixed up with the tank crews, one of the things they used to do every morning was to fire a 6 o'clock gun at Ravalli. And it came around, the tank crews used to be allocated, and it came around to the turn of our tank to do it. And the tank commander, this was before he got knocked off for blowing Hobart's hat off, said, "Well, you needn't bother to come unless you want to." I said, "Oh, yes, you know, I'm part of the tank crew, I'll come." "So you can fire the bloody thing if you want to." "Fair enough." And we went up there, and there was a certain amount of argument as to the actual time, as to whether it was 6 o'clock or not. And he sort of looked at his watch and said, "Oh, go on, fire it." And I fired the gun. It was only a blank round of 3-pounder. What I didn't know was that he'd stuffed a handful of nuts and bolts in a rag up the gun and aimed it at the top of the fitter's marquee. And there was this bang, you see, and a shriek, and great slits appeared at the top of the marquee. And the fitters, of course, came pounding out, wanting to know what the hell was going on. You know, this, of course, was strictly unofficial, as you would imagine. And this was also mixed up with another thing. The tank corps had a lot of experimental equipment sort of put on it to, you know, to test. And one of the things that was tested out was a mobile cookhouse, a mobile stove, I suppose you'd call it. And it was on a trailer, and the sides let down so the cooks could walk around. In the middle was an enormous stove, and the fuel was petrol, of all things. And the cooks had to get up early in the morning to get the, you know, get the breakfast going. And these things stood down in the bottom of the valley, away from everybody. And they had to pump up pressure with a foot pump, like an ordinary tire pump, pump up pressure on this petrol. I'm not quite sure what the pressure was. It was quite considerable. And then the first instruction, I remember looking over this thing, the first instruction was, "See your fire extinguishers are handy." And they had these big, bloody great fire extinguishers that were stood off around this thing. And you pumped up the pressure. And then, I don't know if you know the old original flint gas lighters, do you? Little things like a little trigger on, and it turned a wheel and sparks flew. Well, they had a thing about 20 foot long, like that. And the brave cook laid down behind the fire extinguishers and the box in which some of the equipment came, took cover behind this thing, and they turned the petrol on, sort of ran back, and then he flicked this gas lighter thing. And the number of cooks walking about sort of with no eyebrows and no hair, it was enormous. And ultimately, you know, it would start. And the most resounding bloody whoop when it went off. Because it used to go off about 5 or 4 o'clock, and people would think it was a bloody 6 o'clock gun, much to their fury. But I say that's only one of the incidentals.
So you would say that you enjoy going to these camps partly because of the sort of fun you had out of them?
Oh, yes. Well, obviously one did in the TA. I mean, the social side of the TA was, well, 50% of it, certainly, probably more in a number of cases. I mean, at Elverton Street, we used to have wonderful dances, regimental dinners, concerts and things. I mean, the troops went to, you know, the annual regimental dinner is quite a do. And each section, you know, would have a section dinner. Or if we went out to Ash Ranges to do any sort of a weekend, the evening would be spent, you know, with a supper and bags of beer. And the quantity of beer consumed, I mean, was very substantial. And I don't say it's not done now, but you imagine a rather sort of horsey rugby club, the amount of beer they put away, well, we were on the same sort of standard. The of course, another thing, from a, not a social angle, we used to take part, we used to get a free first-line view of all the ceremonial processions that took place in London. I mean, coronations and jubilees and all that sort of thing. The TA used to line the route. You know, we stood in front of everybody else. But mark you, we had to get up at God knows what hour in the morning, you know, to be there, and you stood on your flat feet for the best part of the day. But whatever was there, you know, you saw it. And if that could be deemed an advantage of being in the TA, an advantage it was. But it was an honour to be in it as well.
Now, you were selected to be to go on a CADA course.
CADA course.
Why was that?
Yes. Well, the idea, when they were forming this tank battalion, obviously there would be expansion of the unit and they wanted more instructors. And they were looking for people who would make suitable instructors. And I'd been on this Vickers machine gun team, and I was keen, if you like. Attendance was reasonably fair. And it was thought that I would make a suitable instructor. And we were trained in instruction, not just, you know, not on the gun side or anything like that. We were trained as instructors. And I must say, the Army does that sort of thing magnificently well. It's one of the things, you know, it's really good at, instruction, how to instruct. And this Ted Priddle was one of the leading lights in this thing. And I can remember I was given a box of matches and instructed, you know, how to strike a match. You want to try it sometime. It's not so bloody easy as you would think. And that was a sort of an elementary thing. Then we were handed things like door locks and bits of simple machinery, bicycle pumps, and given about 10 minutes to prepare it, and we then put the thing together as a sort of 5-minute course of instruction. And there's all the difference in the world between instruction and lecturing. Instruction is making the other people do the thing, not not just standing up and talking about it. You've got to show them how to do it and exercise them in doing it. And the secret to it is to keep asking them questions. You keep questioning and questioning, and you don't say, so-and-so, answer this question. You say what the question is and say, what's the answer to that? And just point it to wherever it is, so their attention is kept all the time.
So you were selected to become an instructor,
yeah,
were you?
Yeah.
In particular what?
Well, as a gunnery instructor on the Vickers machine gun, and I took to it, and in the end I became part of the CADA course, or part of the CADA instructors, an instructor instructing other people in how to instruct, and that was very interesting, and all sorts of things, you know, simple don'ts. I mean, lots of people stand up and do nothing but scratch their balls all the time, or jangle their money, or walk about, and things like facing the blackboard instead of facing the class and all that sort of thing. It's simple things, but you'd be surprised how often it gets done by people who should know better. And then that, of course, took place about 1936. We had another year in 1937, which was almost identical, another year with the tank brigade on Salisbury Plain. And by that time, we were getting to know Salisbury Plain, and the centre line for the advance used to be Till's Head, Bowlesborough, John Willie's, or British Village, John Willie's Tit, Tinker's Furs, 693. Now, I can remember it now. I mean, that's 50 years ago, 40 years ago. But it's the same old, you know, the same old thing. It sticks in your mind. John Willie's Tit was an old windmill which was made by a manufacturer, John Willis Tit, and that's what it was called. And in sort of end of 1937 or sometime in 37, they decided that they were going to form officer producing units, and they'd become the equivalent of what are now known as OCTUs, and the 22nd Battalion was selected to be an officer producing unit. And they ran the first officer producing course, if you like, an examination in 1938 at Till's Head, and I was one of those selected. There were about 25 or 30 selected to do this course, and I was one of those, and I was pleased to say that I came out top of a bloody lot and ended up winner of the Shart Cup. A chap presented the name of Shart, and you might say from then on I've never looked back. That was when we really got stuck into the the manoeuvres and the tactical side of it, as well as the we'd ended up being individual soldiers. We were now crew commanders and section commanders and so on. We're still doing the tactics of Fuller and Hobo, you know, the light section, medium section, and so on. It was done. All the testing and instruction was done by regular tank corps officers, or tank regiment officers as they were then, and special ones were brought in, not just the ones we had in the Westminster Dragoons. The special ones were brought in to do this training for us, and very thorough and very, very well done it was.
How long did that take?
Well, we had been doing classes at Elverton Street, and the first week or so of the training, of our annual training, was being instructed by these people, and the second week, or the end of the second week, was the tests we carried out. And we had to take charge of a tank as a crew commander, and we had to take charge of a section as a section commander. In command of the light section, and also in command of the medium section. And again, I can remember not exactly being horrified, but one of the things with the light section, you advanced with these six tanks, and they came up taking consecutive sort of hull down positions until they met the enemy. And it came up, and one of the sections reported they could see the enemy, and I was the section commander, and the idea was to pin them down before sending the medium section in. And when you got into the hull down position, you were supposed to fire at the enemy. And my tank, I was round a place called the Rings, which was near this Bowles Barrow thing, and we came into the Rings and drove sort of through the Rings, and when you came through, you came into sight of this anti-tank gun, which was a pole on a couple of sticks and a chap waving a flag. Of course, as soon as you saw it, you fired, and I'd manoeuvred the tank into position, and I gave the fire order to fire, and the bloody gunner down below held his hand up and said, "Half a dollar, I don't press the bloody trigger, bastard." And I had to say, "Yes, all right." Otherwise, you know, I'd have failed my bloody exam. Talk about, money for old rope.
This was in the 37 Salisbury exercise, was it?
Yes. This was in taking my officer producing unit exam.
Oh, you went specially down there for this?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, that was a part of the annual training. That was the whole of the annual training was taken up by this business.
Would you say that his attitude, that sort of attitude, is typical of the regular soldier?
Some of them, yes. It was... I don't know how much money he got. I didn't say anything about it. I mean, it's one didn't particularly want to spoil whatever whatever chances one had. One didn't know whether one failed or not at that stage. And to start a row like that would have not been quite such a good idea.
How many of you were selected to do this test?
I think about 25 or 30 was the first lot.
Out of how many?
I should think there must have been a good 300, 350 or something all told. This, again, was a sign of the times. I was a full corporal then, and I qualified on this examination and got this cup, which is incidental. And this was in the August, and then in the August of 38, and we came back again to start training again with the WDs in the end of September of 38. And we were hauled up in front of the CO and said, right, you are now finished with the Westminster Dragoons, go and find yourself a unit and get yourself commissioned. We didn't particularly like that. We hadn't joined the Westminster Dragoons to leave it. We joined the Westminster Dragoons to stay with it. But it was obviously the thing to do, looking back on it, but we didn't particularly like it. And we said, all right, well, you know, where can we go? There were only two tank units in the in London then. There was the 42nd, which I ultimately went into, and the 48th, which was its second line battalion. And they were a converted infantry battalion. They were infantry in 38, I think, became tanks in 38. And I know I went down there and asked if I could be considered, and I was interviewed. And as a matter of fact, I was told I was too old to be a subaltern officer. How old would I be? 26. And I was really too old for it. I got a bit angry about that and said, well, you think I'm too old? You let me take you for a ride in a light tank. I'll show you whether I... We said, we want young men of fire and vigour. I said, you let me take you for a ride in a tank. I'll show you whether I've got fire and vigour or not. Oh, woof, woof. And on we went.
How did you find when you joined them?
The 42nd?
Yeah.
Well, that was a different thing, I would say, a different sort of unit altogether. I mean, we were, the last sort of 2 years of the WDs had been sort of playing around with getting to be officers and doing this OG2 training, and a lot of it was almost experimental, as you might say. It had never been done before, and we sort of went along with it. But from then on, the Westminster Dragoons sort of faded out as far as I was concerned. I still had my friends in it. I kept contact with them. And I then went into the 42nd, which was... I did an annual training in 1939 with them down in Aldershot. And, of course, a couple of months after that, the war started.
How would you say that they compared standard-wise with the Westminster Dragoons?
Oh, well, the... standard-wise, they were much lower, different type of people altogether. You see, the Westminster Dragoons were recruited more from, you might say, the city people, as I said, you know, the bank clerks and insurance people and stockbrokers and so on. But the 42nd was an infantry battalion. Now, the standard of TA infantry, I may be forgiven for saying so, but a lot of them were pretty thick. And they weren't up to driving or anything like that. And they had none of the, you might say, the tank corps skills. And we had an awful job because we had, they had almost a full infantry battalion of people and sergeant majors that couldn't drive a car and officers that couldn't drive a car. The colonel couldn't drive a car. Perkins, he'd never driven a car in his life. And this was one of the, you might say, one of the crosses we had to bear because he was determined to learn to drive. And he did, but he never got over about 25 mile an hour. And anybody in a, you know, in a column with a colonel sort of anywhere in it, it took bloody years to get there. Poor man. But you're interested in the 42nd side of it, are you?
Did you follow with the 42nd the same pattern of once a week training? And
yes. As I was saying, we were interviewed and commissioned. I was commissioned with this great friend of mine, Jack Tatum, who was been in the WDs, before I was. And he's dead now, incidentally, in case you wanted to get in touch with him. We were interviewed. And I tell you something rather amusing about that. Poor old Jack, his sight had failed while he was in the WDs, but he'd managed to get by, but normally he wore thick pebbled glasses. And we went down to the 42nd, and we knew we had to pass another medical. And he said, well, you know, we'll chance it anyway. It's worth a chance. If it could be like some of the others, you know, sort of slap on the chest and you're all right. And lo and behold, it wasn't unlike that. And we went there, and we were seen by the adjutant. He said, oh, we better have a medical examination first. And there was a colonel in the RAMC, he was a medical officer, pretty high, a chap called Acourt. Was it Acourt? Yeah, I think it was. Anyway, he saw us and said, oh, yes, well, get your clothes off, and I'll come back when you're ready. Now, what he did was to bugger off into the mess and got talking to somebody and forgot all about us. And ultimately, I sort of crept out of the room, having been in there about half an hour, and sort of poked my head out and said, the doctor said, wait, you know, has something happened to sort of hold him up? And in the meantime, we were sitting in this sort of medical office, and there were the site charts. And I said to Jack, memorize these bloody things. So he memorized the lower lines on these two charts and some of the other stuff. And he could just about see the big letter on it. All the rest was a blur. And he got this memorized. And to cut a long story short, old Court came. He said, awfully sorry, keep waiting. Talking to the cow. And he was just sucking his whiskey and forgotten all about it. Anyway, he sort of slapped Jack on the test and said, oh, yes, yes, you play rugby? Yes, oh, yes, fine figure of a man. Did the same sort of thing to me, you see, and listened to our hearts. And he said, can you read that? To Jack, you see, and Jack said ZBVXC. Oh, good, good, you see. What about that? Can you read it? Read that one. And I read that one. I could see all right, you see. And he said, right, get your clothes on. Poor old Jack couldn't see his bloody clothes, and he fell over the chair trying to find them. But the doctor never, you know, never twigged it. And he sort of disappeared. And once Jack had got his glasses on, of course, he was all right, but... Dear, what a performance. And we got... but it was a bit difficult, really, when we were in, because Jack and I and the adjutant were the only sort of Royal Tank Regiment people, and the rest of them were very much infanteers, and they were bloody good blokes and trying hard, but, you know, they hadn't got the background. It was hard to, you know, hard graft to go, to
what
get there.
What equipment did you have with them?
Well, again, you see, we were... like everybody else, starved of equipment. And they had, actually they did bring two light tanks down to Clapham, and with the idea of driving around Clapham Junction, but crowds of kids and so forth sort of poured all over them. And they had to stop it because it was so dangerous. And like everybody else, we did our tank driving at Aldershot. And... they had, ultimately, we didn't have a riper before the war. They had a riper after the war. We used to borrow the WD's riper. We used to send classes down to Elverton Street to use the riper there. And but it was very, again, we were back as officers. I was OC Headquarters Squadron, actually. I was stuck in there. But as far as our individual training was concerned, we were trying hard to make basic tank corps soldiers, you know, back on the old Vickers machine gun and elementary driving and all that sort of thing, because they had no tank drivers or anything at all. And some of them were literally, you know, untrainable as tank corps soldiers, and that was one of the difficulties when the war started. We had to get rid of this part of 100 people, you see, is unsuitable. It was very hard going. Some of them had been in the TA for bloody years, broke their hearts. But, you know, it had to be done.
Did you go with them on any train? Oh, you went on one training exercise with them?
We did one camp, yes, at Aldershot. Where's the... we were mostly on Laffan's Plain. But this was more, it wasn't an exercise, it wasn't manoeuvres in the, you know, in the accepted sense. We went up to that standard. It was very much the individual driving and so forth.
You were with them then when war broke out?
When war broke out, yes.
What did you do when war broke out? How did you go about...
I was OC Headquarters Squadron. I was also assistant adjutant to the adjutant, because the then assistant adjutant had decided he wanted to go in the Air Force and was transferred into the Air Force. And Bam Winberg, who was the adjutant, said, right, you're assistant. And I was being trained up to be adjutant. I was also second in command of a tank squadron. What they did, I was a second lieutenant, and it was a second lieutenant's command, OC Headquarters Squadron, originally. Then they decided it was a major's command. They uplifted it, and they weren't prepared to promote me from second lieutenant to major in one hit. So I had to be something else, and one of the other majors got the job, which was fair enough, a chap called Laurie Ashton. And I became second in command of a tank squadron, and this went on. We had various sort of bits and pieces, fun on Salisbury Plain, and we went through the Cromwell period, you know, of emergency turnouts for invasion of Germany. We ran a reception centre for chaps coming back from Dunkirk. We ran that in Aldershot. And then I was... this again is all part of... there's only little snippets of experience, but one of the things we had to do, they said, well, you better do all the courses you can to... if you've got lots of qualifications on courses, we'd be able to make you adjutant that much more easily. And I was sent on numerous courses to do these things. One of them was a gas course, of all things. And I did this buddy gas course, and it was simple, or fairly simple, and I got a distinction on it. You'll say, well, fair enough, I try to get distinction on all the courses I went on for this very reason, of being an adjutant, not for any other reason. And the next thing was a letter from the War Office directing me to be sent to Porton to do a special course in gas warfare, offensive gas warfare, not defence, offence, you know, use of gas. I said, bugger that, you know, I didn't join the army to do that. And I'm, you know, I'm not going to do it. And my Colonel Willison, he knew the commandant of the gas school at Porton. He was a VC, I forget what his name was. Anyway, he went with me to see this bloke. And he just said, no, he's selected and he's got the qualifications. He's proved he's got the qualifications. He's got to do it. So having obtained this, you know, wonderful sort of qualification on this gas course, it did me more harm really than good for my own personal wishes. So I had to leave the 42nd and do this gas course. When I'd done the gas course, I went back to the 42nd and thought, well, thank God, you know, maybe they'd forgotten about it, but they hadn't. And the next thing, I was appointed a GSO3 CW, which was chemical warfare, to the 8th Armoured Div. And I had then done this staff course and so forth, and this gas, and